The thing that excites me about open source is finding ways that we can collaborate on what I'm calling ambiguous blobs of compute and turning them into a distributed system. And starting to move in a place where instead of building these bigger data centers, we can use the compute that's available to us on the edge.
Welcome to the Open at Intel podcast, where we're all about open source, from software to security to innovation and beyond. I'm your host, Catherine Druckmann, an open source evangelist at Intel, bringing you leading edge, free-ranging conversations from some of the best minds in the open source community. Let's get into it. In this bonus episode, I talked with one of Intel's open source community leaders, Marlo Weston, about her work with the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, particularly focusing on environmental sustainability. We covered the importance of power use and carbon emissions in data centers and the potential impact of AI workloads. Check it out. Thank you, Marlo, for joining me to answer these questions. I'm really excited to talk to you because you have an interesting role within the cloud native community, and I think you're doing very important work, but I won't spoil it for everyone listening. I'll let you tell us the story. So Marlo, first tell us who you are and what you do at Intel, but then I'd like you to tell us a little bit more about the work you do with the CNCF, the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, and your role there.
So my name is Marlo Weston. I work over at Intel doing resource management in Kubernetes. So most of the stuff that we do has to do with on-the-node resource optimization or with scheduling issues. So we do both of those on this team, and I'm the architect on that team. As far as CNCF, I am a Environmental Sustainability Technical Advisory Group chair. And what that means is we basically try to keep that meeting running, establish new working groups, giving content to the community, and that's most of it. And we have a landscape doc that we try to keep up to date as far as what projects are still are coming up and coming and which ones are established within the community regarding environmental sustainability.
That's cool. So we were both actually at KubeCon recently, and you were involved in a couple of keynotes. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
So there were two keynotes. One of them was on environmental sustainability. It was with Tammy McGowan, Rima Iontel, Anika Madaladake, and Frederick Kautz was kind enough to moderate for us, specific to environmental sustainability. And the reason we chose this particular topic was sometimes when we talk to customers, they say things like, yeah, we're just trying to get performance, we'll worry about power use later. But power use is becoming more and more prevalent as far as cost to data centers. And if you look at carbon use, that's almost always tied, if you look critically, as to what power is available in those regions. So as we move more to green, what we call green power, right, which is wind and solar, those aren't on all the time. So which data center you should be scheduling for to reduce costs for your data center changes according to what the most green technologies are available most of the time.
Are those talks recorded?
Yeah, those talks are recorded. They're uploaded.
Are they available now?
They're available now on YouTube. Okay. And the AI one, great. Sorry. The AI one, I was pulled into because AI workloads are becoming bigger and bigger as far as how much power they're using. So I've gotten a look at some of the boxes of the future, and they're over 10 kilowatts per box with all the cards loaded in, sometimes double that, which is a huge amount of power. Usually with data centers, a single rack is about 5 kilowatts. So you're talking two racks worth of power in one of these servers. So we need to start being conscious of what we're using AI for, because that's Bitcoin mining, but bigger. That's the phrase I used in the keynote. So there's a lot of work in that area.
I was going to ask that, is this the new
it is
Bitcoin
absolutely
mining in terms of environmental concern?
It is absolutely the new Bitcoin mining in terms of concern. It's not just environmental. If you go and you look at Japan, they have a certain amount of power that's available to them. That's not going to increase. They don't have more places to build power factories. So they have to work with what they have. And that's becoming more frequent. So California data centers also, they have a certain amount of power available. It's hard to continue to build on it. So when you start looking at regional data centers, they're going to have to be a little bit more careful about how they use power. It's not, oh, well, we'll just pay for more power anymore.
I'll definitely link to those so people can check them out. I wondered if we could go back a little bit in time and talk about
how you got started in open source work. Like, what brought you into contributing and to being involved in open source communities?
So I'm fairly practical. So if I'm trying to get something done and it's not happening internally, I will also look externally as to what's going on. And like all engineers, I'm lazy. One of the ways to be most efficient, i.e. lazy, is to collaborate with people and projects that are already done and piggyback off of that work. But also to contribute and make sure those projects stay healthy. Because if you don't make sure they stay healthy, then all the work you've done on top of it is going to go to waste. So if we look at the Linux kernel, right, Intel contributes to the Linux kernel because if it is not stable, then our chips don't run well and we get blamed for issues. And you see other chip manufacturers doing similar for Linux contributions. In Cloud Native, that's similar. The reason I got pulled in was people were working on a new environmental sustainability group, and they were trying to put together a charter. There was a working group. They decided to make that a tag. And so I became involved at the point when they were forming that charter, partially because we do the Kubernetes Power Manager on this team. So we wanted to just, you know, chat and see and listen to the customers. It's a nice place to listen to end users and customers for the future. But part of the thing is once I get started with a project, I don't stop. So the next thing I know, I'm helping with a variety of things, including the landscape documentation, because I want to know what's out there and put together a full list. And the community is fairly welcoming. So that's most of why I ended up involved, was wrong place at the right time.
It's the scratch your own itch story, inevitably, with everyone. I think, you know, you have a problem you need to solve, and there are other people out there that can help you solve it. So it just sucks you in, especially if it's a very welcoming community.
Yeah. And some of that has a little bit to do with having an attitude of just going in and getting involved. And I see a lot of people who have ideas who want to get involved, but they're afraid. They're afraid they're going to get shot down. They're afraid they're going to get yelled at. They're afraid they're going to be called stupid. That's the worst thing in the world to call an engineer is stupid. We get kind of mad.
Take it personally.
We take it very personally when you call us stupid. So I see a lot of hesitation. And so in open source, you don't know who the other person is. There's no HR department. There's a code of conduct thing with CNCF, but there's no real HR department preventing people from worrying about their job, right? So you have to be welcoming in those communities and raise up the next set of people. But I've been used to abrasive personalities in the past, so I wasn't worried about it. I guess this is for any listeners, please be encouraged to go and speak up. Most people are not as scary as they look. The ones that are, at least at CNCF, they're pretty good at slapping down and saying, please be nice to other people, sort of way.
Yeah, I see it. I mean, I've been involved in open source for a very long time. And these things have changed over time, right? And they're you know, the occasional bad actors here and there. But for the most part, people are pretty cool. Because I think, you know, at some level, we all know, I mean, especially, you know, from an engineering perspective also, but also, you know, in other areas of contribution, people know that this is only sustainable, not in the environmental sense, but in the, like, actually, like, keep it going sense, because our lives depend on open source software. It's not sustainable unless you're encouraging new contributors and people who may have very little experience in these areas. And so, yeah,
exactly.
I think I see a lot more nurturing, I think, today than I maybe did 15 years ago or something like that. But I wonder what motivates you to keep going with your contribution. As you say, from my perspective, I think your contribution energy can ebb and flow a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. But I wonder kind of what keeps you going.
Mostly the people. The people are well engaged and they're all very wonderful. At the end of the day, part of my goal is to grow more junior engineers into leadership roles because, again, I'm lazy. I want them to go do the work. I don't want to be the one doing the work. So some of that is that engagement with more junior engineers and working with them and watching them develop and watching them grow. And that's a big deal for me. The other reason I stay engaged is environmental sustainability really does have a long ways to go. So it's really easy to add value. You don't have to work very hard to add value in that space.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. I mean, that seems in itself quite motivating.
Yep.
How do the missions of the CNCF and your work at Intel align? I mean, there's obviously room for it, right? You're in your work at Intel. You have room to contribute, which is great, which is frankly a privilege. And it's one that I've experienced for most of my tech career, but I know it's not the norm necessarily. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder how the alignment helps with that.
So usually what I do is I go and I make a business case for whatever I want to do. And if you don't like the the outcomes change the rules is a phrase I've heard before. But with Intel, we really are out there to make money. That's what we are as a company. We're also there, you know, to help the world. But end of the day, our stock prices matter and whether or not we get a paycheck next time. And with CNCF, at least the environmental sustainability thing, I say, well, our customers care about performance per watt. And so you can make a case of being involved in a community. And this is true pretty much of anyone. If you're working in a particular field and there's something you are interested in, there's almost always an open source community to support that. And all you have to do is speak with your management and make a business case. So some of this is user, is Intel hasn't necessarily, and Intel has been very supportive, but Intel isn't necessarily in the business of pushing you to go do open source unless it's useful. And that's going to be true of anything. So it's finding the use case between the real world and the internal.
How do Intel customers see the benefits? You mentioned you mentioned getting out there and talking to customers, and I wondered how to draw the line between the work you do, both internally and externally, and actual customer benefit.
So the internal pieces, if it is based on Intel hardware, or if it's some proprietary solution, that's obviously Intel only. With open source, you're more trying to contribute to projects that are being upstreamed. And so you understand those will be used by the full community. Customers care because they want to save money on how much money they're paying on a data center. A data center is 1-2% of the world's power use, which is huge, right? That's a huge amount of power that they're using. And if you think about it, a lot of the cost of a data center is cooling and power. And it's not necessarily in purchases of hardware. So they sometimes care more about the amount of power it's going to take to run a system than they do about the initial cost of that system.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Ongoing expenses are really what eats you. So there's a phrase that goes around in open source work, especially in terms of contribution, and that is chop wood and carry water. And I wonder what that means to you in terms of contributing to open source.
So in the environmental sustainability group, we've rephrased that to plant trees and carry water because we don't think you should be chopping the trees down.
Nice.
So that's fun.
I like that.
But as far as what it means that if you see an area that they need help and it's something that you can do that isn't going to impact the rest of your world, you go do it. And so if someone says, hey, will someone take notes? I'm almost always the one to take notes in our meetings. Because, you know, it's easy for me to do.
That's a very valuable contribution.
And it's a valuable contribution. So a lot of that has to do with, oh, this small thing needs to get done. Go do that, right? I mean, there's bigger ones with bigger lifts. So product management is always a skill that's useful everywhere. And so finding people to help wrangle other humans is always a really productive thing. And if you're good at that, you should go and try to help. And you can get engaged even if you're not technical, with something like a communications group. So at the Environmental Sustainability Group, we have the working group comms, and that's basically organizing for conferences. You don't have to be technically capable in those cases.
So broadening our conversation just a little bit, again, open source software and the open source community kind of as a whole, if you can take it that way, it has a lot going on, right? That's a big world out there. It's no longer just sort of a niche kind of edge alternative way of looking at technology. We've kind of taken over the world. What excites you most about the future of open source in general? And I mean, maybe also with the sustainability work that you do specifically, but I just kind of, I'm curious to know, like, when you look forward at kind of the technology horizon, what are you excited about and where do you want to dig in and change the world?
So my background is more in HPC compute and distributed systems than it is in microservices. And I've been having a rant for a long time usually at HPC folks, about how we need to move from set systems into more distributed systems. And this AI stuff is even more true, right? We're moving more and more into having bigger, better compute with all the cards going on. When we start looking at that, the thing that excites me about open source is finding ways that we can collaborate on what I'm calling ambiguous blobs of compute and turning them into a distributed system and starting to move in a place where instead of building these bigger data centers, we can use the compute that's available to us on the edge and be able to still do the same sorts of workloads and fantastic computations that we've been doing previously in large data centers. As far as open source, I just like working with the people. So collaborating, you can't do it with just a single company. You just don't have the expertise available to do something like this. You need a lot of creativity. And one thing about open source is you find people from all sorts of fields, not just your little niche of the world. And so you can pull in more ideas and more thoughts as far as what these systems should look like.
That's very interesting. I mean, I suppose if you think about it, there's a tremendous amount of sort of untapped computing power.
Absolutely.
In the whole, in the world, right? There's a lot out there. I mean, assuming the people who, let's say, control it are willing to contribute it, it's kind of in a way like botnet for good. I don't know.
Well, it's why we did Bitcoin mining to begin with, right? You just run Bitcoin right, background exactly, as an app. Yeah. So this is just another way to do that. But Bitcoin was, I don't think it has had any potential for good, to be honest, but AI does if we use it wisely and we are careful about how we use it.
Yeah, I think that's an important caveat there, which I appreciate. Where would you personally like to have the most impact? What do you want to be known for?
I really like optimizing things. So that's really where I am. So with HPC compute, you're optimizing for performance. And with AI, you're still optimizing for performance. And with all the power and sustainability stuff, you're optimizing for power use. So, I mean, that's really the niche I like to go play with. I have a pretty strong science background, so that, I don't know, it's my happy place. I don't worry so much about what I'm known for as making sure that the world moves forward in the directions that I would like to see the compute move.
It's one of those things where this is why I enjoy talking to people like you, right? And talking to everybody, talking to people who are so deep into areas that I know so very little about, like power management. That's not something that I, it has ever occurred to me. I'm, somewhere, at a different layer of the software traditionally. So I wondered what advice you might have for people in any discipline, frankly, but in yours as well. Who would like to be more involved in contributing to open source projects and communities. What advice would you have for them?
Don't be afraid at all to speak up. Don't be afraid to reach out to individuals. So if you see someone in the community that makes you happy, right? And I really mean happy, like someone that you want to know more, right? They're the ones usually you want to reach out to, especially if they're senior level. And they're almost always friendly. And say, hey, I'm really interested in getting involved. Here's my interest set. Can you guide me? And almost all of us are willing to help and guide. And the ones that aren't, well, they'll shuffle you off to someone who may suit your needs and stuff. And it's being brave. It's being able to ask, hey, I would like to make an impact. How can I make an impact? Because if you just go to the meetings and listen and then wait, it's going to be a lot harder than if you go and find someone to help you break into the community.
Yeah. That's really good advice, actually. I have myself been a victim of my own
imposter syndrome.
What's the word I'm looking for? Well, imposter syndrome is part of it, but introversion is also just part of it, right? It's so easy to go and listen and just absorb. And I am that type of person who I'll absorb for a very long time before maybe I'll speak up. But it's really good to just kind of force yourself to have that push to reach out to one person, like you say. It's
and really good for advice. Introverts, it works really well because in a one-on-one, you're much more relaxed than when you're with a whole community. Sometimes it can be daunting to get on a call and there's 40 people on that call and they're like, hey, who's new? Hey, we want to welcome you. Yeah, great.
Oh God.
You want me to talk in front of 40 people and say who I am.
Crippling anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. It's not always productive. The other thing I would ask is that leaders start getting a little bit better about pulling people along. If you have someone new who's being shy, reach out to them. They shouldn't always have to reach out to you and say hello. Ask them what they need. Ask them how you can help them. I don't see enough of that because we're all super busy. We're all trying to make our deadlines. And myself too, I could do more of this. But we should be asking people that are new how we can help them get involved and encouraging them and putting in the work, basically so we can work less later. That's ultimately the goal. But putting in the work to help them contribute.
Thank you so much. I think I've learned a little bit about sustainability and why it matters. And I think everybody listening has too. So I really appreciate it. If there's anything that you wanted to make sure to mention and didn't get a chance, please feel free.
Please do come to our meetings. If you are interested in environmental sustainability, we're not just talking about all the idealist stuff. We have very practical solutions. There's a landscape document that goes through a lot of the projects that are available and what some of the users are looking for, because we also have a use case section. Because one thing I note with engineers is often we want to just go design something, but we forget about the users. You have to remember who's using your products. Mm-hmm. So there is a use case section, and feel free to reach out to me personally and find a place if you have something strategic you want to add. Or even if you're just looking around, that's fine too.
Well, thank you. And thank you for being a welcoming part of the open source community out there. I look forward to seeing what you do in the future.
Thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to Open at Intel. Be sure to check out more from the Open at Intel podcast at open.intel.com/podcast and at Open at Intel on Twitter. We hope you join us again next time to geek out about open source.